live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studio in New York City, and we welcome you. Today, my guest in the second part of our program will be Bruce Dixon. He is co-founder and managing editor of Black Agenda Report, which is a broadcast that's heard each week, Monday at 4 p.m. on Progressive Radio Network. In the past, Bruce was a rank-and-file member of many organizations, a union activist, a community organizer, dedicated to improving many of our nation's poorest communities, and now serves on the State Committee of the Georgia Green Party. But what we're going to do with Bruce is we're going to talk about the falsehoods behind the Coney 2012 agenda. Now, this is possibly the fastest spreading, most viewed YouTube phenomena in history. And the question is it legitimate, all of it? Or is part of it legitimate and part of it propaganda? And if so, what's behind this propaganda? We're going to explore this in some depth. What would be one of the most dangerous sugars that you could put into your body, but people don't know about it? So we're going to give you some update on something more dangerous than aspartame, but is not listed in the ingredient columns in foods that we're eating. You'll find out about it today on why this sugar substitute could be extremely concerning. Also today, the latest on health and healing, including holy basil. It's good for a lot of stuff. Hypnosis for kids. What will it do? I'm going to give you that. And I'm also going to address something I continue to see, and that is we're led to believe that we really have no control over the prices of oil. And so we see it fluctuate up or down, and more often than not, up. Why? Is it because we're using more gasoline, driving more? No, it is not. And I'll give you the facts once on the table. You can examine them objectively for yourself, how we're being manipulated. And the government and its agencies know this. Also, the latest from our environmental section on we can confirm that gas hydrofracking has indeed caused earthquakes in Ohio, and we'll give you the science behind that. Our commentary of the day is from Lin Ding on missing foundations. Very provocative, and I'm going to ask you to listen in and then call in and share your points of view on that. So we have a lot to share. And let's get started. Always with something on health and healing, always with something that empowers us. I think that we should know more about the healing capacity of fruits, vegetables, herbs. And there's one that's very interesting. This comes from a peer-reviewed journal, Journal of Medicinal Food. And they tested what was called holy basil. And it's a leaf extract, and it has enormous potential to stop oxidative and stress-induced cancer and an enzyme imbalance. So they found a chemical in this that is able to do a great deal of good. Now, since I grow basil, I like lemon basil, licorice basil, cinnamon basil. There is lime basil, and it actually tastes like lime or lemon or cinnamon. If you've ever grown it, it's delicious. This is a little different. It's also known by its international name as Tulsi, T-U-L-S-I, and it's really a good healer. It also has a nice scent to it. And in the Hindu region, the holy basil is a sacred plant which is used during meditation and is considered a staple in everyone's home garden. And among herbalists, holy basil is known as an adaptogen. Now, ginseng is an adaptogen, and ginkgo is an adaptogen. And so is this. What it means is that the herb increases the body's resistance to a variety of environmental threats and stressors. Very high antioxidant properties. And it is also a medicinal superfood. It can combat cancer, and it can heal neuropathy caused by surgery. It can also be used in helping acne. So that's just the latest on something most people have not heard of, but we should. Next up, we have a lot of kids in the United States who have some stomach problems. Well, for a lot of reasons. First, because today a lot of kids are more stressed than kids of different eras, because they're expected to do more. They're expected to perform at higher levels. They're expected to win at all costs. In fact, many kids today just don't have time to be children. I can remember, I'm sure many of you remember, growing up where from the age of one or two until six, when you went to school, grade school, you were carefree. You explored the world. You learned about yourself and your friends and your family in ways that were emotional and joyful and sometimes painful. But we had time not to be micromanaged. We had our own time. Today, that's not true. Enormous pressure. So kids have stress-related stomach issues. Then, today, kids are drinking more soft drinks. They're drinking more caffeinated beverages. They're also having more problems with artificial ingredients that we just didn't have at that time. You start loading a kid up in the morning with a caffeinated beverage, let's say 200, 300 milligrams of caffeine before noon, with maybe, 20 teaspoons of sugar. That's absolutely normal for kids who are drinking sodas. Then you start giving them sweets in the form of cakes and then refined carbohydrates. You've got a kid who is going to have digestive problems. Then they eat larger amounts of food than what we've eaten in the past. I remember distinctly going to my aunt's house for a summer down in Florida, my mother's sister. And when she would serve food, I would watch how she measured it because I always felt, gee whiz, there wasn't a whole lot of food on the plate. But indeed, there was. And she was trim and fit and wonderful, had a great personality. But she would give it a little tiny slice of everything, nothing big. And so my brother and I, Steve and I, went down there together to stay as kids. We tried to figure out how can we open up the ice cream that's in the freezer when everyone's asleep at night and scoop out the back of it and so they don't think it's been gotten to until someday they get to that part and see there's half of it's gone. So all kinds of way of sneaking more food than we did. But I never saw obese kids. It was rare to have an obese kid, and I saw no children that had adult diabetes. They had adult 1 diabetes, but not adult 2 diabetes, or childhood diabetes, I should say, juvenile diabetes. Today, we have adult diabetes in children, obesity in children, morbid obesity in children, heart disease in children, and it's needless to say, all that plays havoc because they're eating too much food, much more food than what their body can digest, leads to stomach problems. So what to do? Give them antacids? I think not, because here's what happens when you take an antacid. Yes, it does work. It will substantially neutralize the low pH, which is also high acidic level of your stomach. But almost always when you have indigestion, after you've eaten. What is the purpose of eating a meal? To get the nutrients broken down, digested, and absorbed and utilized. So what happens to those nutrients in a partially digested stomach that you've eaten too much food, too much fat, too much animal protein, sugars and fats together, like in a cheesecake, and now it's bad food combining, and the body simply can't handle it, so you get indigestion? Well, you turn off digestion, all that gets dumped. And then we have the phenomena of the dumping sensation, where large amounts of food is only partially digested, not fully hydrolyzed, not fully broken down. The ideal digestion should be almost like a soup. That's it, a soup, when it goes in the intestine. That maximizes what the nutrients are when they're absorbed. Why do you think I put so many people on dietary programs that emphasize a liquid breakfast and a liquid in mid-afternoon? Because the liquid is all going to be 95 to 100% absorbable. There's really no digestion in the stomach. So this way, for people with any digestive problems, absorption problems, leaky gut syndrome, you're avoiding all that. You're taking something that's already ready for digestion, and you're getting it into them in maximum doses. And hence, they start to feel better, more energy. You'll start to see their clearness in their eyes. you'll start to see a sparkle in them. And that's why we don't see this in children. Too much food, not getting digested, then malabsorption, then malnutrition. Isn't it a phenomenon we can be overfed and undernourished? Too many calories and too few nutrients getting in the body. So what is a new way of helping them? Hypnosis. This comes from a major study done at the University of North Carolina, and here's what it says. Hypnosis can help kids' stomach woes long-term. I'll quote this from Reuters. Hypnosis may bring long-lasting relief to some kids with irritable bowel syndrome and chronic stomach pain. Researchers found that the children with the stomach problems who had 6 hypnosis sessions were still doing well 5 years later. Now, for someone who believes very strongly in hypnosis, and I have seen a lot of people help with hypnosis, let me just give you one example of how it helps. And by the way, in my opinion, 2 of the best hypnosis in the United States, Dr. Michael Lerner, I think he is simply in a class by himself, and he has helped thousands of people. And I'm not sure I haven't spoken to him well, but Joseph Bimblich is outstanding. He lived over in Brooklyn. I should reconnect with him, see how he's doing. In any case, let's go back to the mid-1980s. I'm walking down Broadway and decide to say hello to a friend of mine who's a chiropractor. And I walked into his office, and a gentleman was just leaving and turned to Morty and said, "Well, I'll see you same time next month." And Morty says, "Yeah, you know, it's too bad, but there's no other choice." And I said, I just was curious. I said, "Excuse me, what is it you come here for?" He said, "Well, every month, like clockwork, without exception, I go into all forms of back spasms and I have pain, and Morty here, corrects it, and then I feel fine." I said, "Do you know of any physical condition that would automatically trigger an episode every so many days at so many hours?" I said, "There is no such condition." I said, "Have you looked at the fact that this may be behavioral and emotional?" He said, "No." And I said, "Well, look in the area called psychoneuroimmunology." And I just happened to be doing a study at that time at the Institute of Applied Biology showing that what we think, what we believe, corresponds to how our body responds. And that was based upon being able to fairly accurately predict, what kind of illnesses a person would develop simply with no illnesses. These were completely healthy people based upon their emotions. For example, people who felt unappreciated or underappreciated manifested in inflammatory joint pain like arthritis. People felt abandoned. People felt abused, but emotionally abused. Frequently it was breast cancer, and so it went. And a lot of people who felt that they were considered inferior, unworthy of love and attention, rejected. Gastrointestinal disturbances. Anyhow, that was just what I was working on and had been for some years. So I said, "Would you be willing to do a little test?" And he said, "Sure." So I introduced him to a hypnotherapist. The hypnotherapist put him under hypnosis. And I was there the day he did it, and it was really neat how he did this. This hypnotherapist, this PhD in psychology, board-certified psychologist, who worked at the Albert Ellis Center at the time, he had him go back through his life, and his life then was as a picture book. And he says, "Now, on each page, you're going to see happy pictures and sad pictures and joyful pictures and fearful pictures. I want you to tell me about the sad or fearful pictures." And everything was rather okay until he was back at the age of 4, and he was cleaning the plates off the dinner table helping his mom, and he tripped on the rug, and one of the plates fell and broke. And his father screamed at him, "You're not responsible. You can't be trusted with any chore, anything you're asked to do." Well, the kid then says that, my friend said, "And what were you doing?" He said, I was so embarrassed, and I was so afraid of my father. I put my head down, and I brought my shoulders up trying to hide myself. Okay? Now, what happens every month today? Well, I'm a bank manager, and every month we have an assessment meeting with the district managers, and I have to present reports, and I have to be held accountable. So let's go back now, and let's change this. So went back through, and then under hypnosis was told, okay, now pick the plates up from the dinner table, and now go into the middle of the floor, and your father now comes over and says, you know, in Greek tradition, when you have a great meal and you're celebrating life, you break the plates. So let's throw the plates right up into the fireplace. So the mother, the father, and the son were laughing and throwing the plates into the fireplace. And then he said, your father is giving you a big hug and looking in the eyes and say, son, nothing you will ever do will make me feel less proud of you. I'll always be proud of you. I'll always love you. And you're always going to be responsible. And then he was brought out of hypnosis. Never again did he have any physical pain in his back. One single session did it. And my friend, who was the chiropractor, remarked about how, you know, gee whiz, now I got to think of how many other people come in here with conditions like this. And it wasn't unusual. So my suggestion is this. If you have children that you believe are under stress or hyper, don't give them Ritalin. Don't get them into psychiatric mental health clutches before you first try neuro-linguistic programming, regressive hypnosis, what I just suggested, and changing their diet, and understanding there are a lot of us who are simply very creative, and creative people are like wild horses. Could you imagine saying that all horses have to be neutered? All horses have to be, you know, like a mule train? No. There are people who have dynamic energies, creative energies, eccentricities, and we must respect this. And today we want to commodify everything as a blanderdized, standardized, don't act up, don't speak out, stay the same and don't question anything. And medications help them get that done. And we don't want that. Next up, an extract of plantain has blood sugar lowering effects in diabetic mice. This is from methods found in the experimental clinical pharmacology. And this was done at the University of Durban in South Africa. And what it shows is that for those in cultures, the cultures of people in Trinidad, Barbados, Jamaica, Haiti, Dominican Republic, much of South America and Central America, Mexico, plantain is everywhere. It's a common dish. Kind of looks like a banana, but you steam it or you broil it or you bake it, and you can do all kinds of things with it. It tastes delicious. But if you're a diabetic or pre-diabetic, you could be helped by having your blood sugar lower by using that. And one other nutrient that is very good for us, it's noni. N-O-N-I. This is from the Department of Pharmacology, from the Shaw College of Pharmacy, Women's University in Mumbai. And it says this, that it has immunostimulatory activity on T and B lymphocytes, confirming its traditional use in the treatment of infections. So noni, which you generally get as a powder or a juice, is very beneficial to your immune system, especially if you have old AIDS-relating conditions or any conditions of depressed immune system, which is a lot of people. So that's good. And one final note, olive leaf, this is the latest a study, it modulates blood pressure. Now, I've suggested always having in your home emergency medicine kit olive leaf extract, 1,000 milligrams. And because it can help you with infections, it's antiviral, it's antibacterial. Here's the latest, quote, high blood pressure is one of the most accurate predictors of cardiovascular disease, the number one killer of Americans. Tragically, mainstream medicine's definition of what constitutes high blood pressure remains dangerously high. According to current medical standards, so-called stage 1 hypertension begins at a reading of 140 over 90 mm per hg or higher. And we believe it should be lower. I believe it should be 115 over 75. So in comes the olive leaf or the olive fruit. And it's a core constituent of the Mediterranean diet. I don't care where you go in the Mediterranean. You're going to find olives. They have over 150 variety of olives. And they all have different tastes, textures. But they all have something in common. They have a very powerful set of chemicals that help the body. And then there is the leaf. Now, I grow olives. I have olive trees. Olive trees can be 1,000 years old, by the way. And the leaf of the olive tree is also extremely medicinal. So by using the olive leaf, not the olive, the olive leaf, in capsule form, it can help lower blood pressure. Now, there is what is called oleuropein. O-L-E-U-R-O-P-E-I-N. It's found in very high concentrations in the leaf of the olive tree, and that is what causes your blood pressure to be brought down. It also lessens arterial stiffness. So try to have olive leaf extract if you are of high blood pressure. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome, all of you. I'm Gary Nall, broadcasting from our studios in New York City. Nice to have you with us. Our guest, Bruce Dixon, will be with us in a few moments, but I wanted to share a commentary today, and thank you, Steve Brown, for sending it to me. It's about American exceptionalism. I've seen so many times individuals, whether it's Bill O'Reilly, who seems to be the high priest of promoting American exceptionalism, and indeed, historically and at many levels, we have qualities individually and collectively that allow us to feel good about ourselves, and we should pride ourselves on that. At the same time, if we're going to be honest and open and change, we have to always walk in the direction of our fear, our limitations, our dark side, and our weaknesses. If we're honest, if we choose not to be honest, then we only promote our exceptionalism and deny anything that actually is a contradiction to it. And that's what I believe we've been doing for a long time. So with that in mind, I'd like to quote a non-attributed review of some of the quotes from people who are used as standard bearers of America's exceptionalism. Then I'd like your feedback. I'll quote this. The leaders of imperial powers have traditionally told themselves and their citizens that their country was exceptional and that their subjugation of a particular foreign land should be seen as a civilizing mission, a liberation, God's will, and of course bring freedom and democracy to the benighted and downtrodden. It's difficult to kill large numbers of people without a claim of virtue. I wonder if this sense of exceptionalism has been embedded anywhere more deeply than in the United States, where it is drilled into every cell and ganglion of American consciousness from kindergarten on. If we measure the degree of indoctrination of a population as the gap between what the people believe their government has done to the world and what it actually does, the American people are clearly the most indoctrinated people on the planet. The role of the American media is, of course, indispensable in this process. Now, here's a challenge for our audience. Try naming a single American daily newspaper or television network that was unequivocally against the U.S. attacks on Libya, Iraq, Afghanistan, Yugoslavia, Panama, Grenada, and Vietnam. Well, let me make it easier. How about even against any two of them? Okay. How about against one of them? Which of the mainstream media expressed real skepticism and challenged the authority and powers that be of the war on terror in its early years? Overloaded with a sense of America's moral superiority, each year the State Department judges the world, issuing reports evaluating the behavior of all other nations, often accompanied by sanctions of one kind or another. There are differing reports that rate how each lesser nation has performed in the previous year in the areas of religious freedom, human rights, the war on drugs, trafficking in persons, and counterterrorism, as well as maintaining a list of international terrorist groups. The criteria used in these reports are mainly political, wherever applicable. Now, quote, the causes of the malady are not entirely clear, but its reoccurrence is one of the uniformities of history. Power tends to confuse itself with virtue. And a great nation is peculiarly susceptible to the idea that its power is a sign of God's favor, conferring upon it a special responsibility for other nations, to make them richer and happier and wiser, to remake them, that is, in its own shining image. Who was that? Former U.S. Senator William Fulbright. How about this? From Herman Melville. We Americans are the peculiar chosen people, the Israel of our time. We bear the ark of the liberties of the world. God has predestined, mankind expects great things from our race and great things we feel in our souls. All right. How about John LeClair writing a commentary in the Times of London just before our invasion of Iraq? God appointed America to save the world in any way that suits America. God appointed Israel to be the nexus of America's Middle Eastern policy, and anyone who wants to mess with that idea is anti-Semitic, anti-American, and with the enemy, a terrorist. Didn't we know that Bill O'Reilly said the same thing once we started the war? Now that we're in this war, if you are not for us, you're for the enemy. This is from Michael Ignatieff, the Washington Post columnist. To most of its citizens, America is exceptional. It is only natural that it should take exception to certain international standards. Last night, I believe it was Lieutenant Colonel Ralph Peters, who was called in as an objective, independent expert on Bill O'Reilly. Here's what he says. Our country is a force for good without precedent. And how about Thomas Barnett, U.S. Naval War College? The U.S. military is a force for global good and has no equal. Okay, and John Bolton, we see him all the time on Fox, right? Without any challenge to his background, without any of the enormous political damage that he has caused, or how his reputation could be affected if they had someone there to challenge him. Quote, this is, the United States could not be legally bound or constrained in any way by its international treaty obligations. The United States needed to be unashamed, unapologetic, uncompromising American constitutional power base. Senior decision makers should be free to use force unilaterally. So in other words, whatever we do in America militarily is perfectly legitimate. How about Condoleezza Rice? Remember her? This is what she said before she became Secretary of State. Notions of international law and norms or institutions like the United Nations, because it was on the right side of history, all right, should not in any way be limited, meaning the United States should not be limited in any way by any international treaty. President George Bush said he didn't want other countries dictating terms or conditions for the war on terrorism. Quote, at some point we may be the only ones left. That's okay with me. We are America. Another, America got it right a half a century ago. What persists and promises no end of grief is our conviction that Providence has summoned America to tutor all of humankind on its pilgrimage to perfection. And how about this one? Behold a republic gradually but surely becoming the supreme moral factor to the world's progress and accepted arbiter of the world's disputes. Who was that? William Jennings Bryan, U.S. Secretary of State under Woodrow Wilson. And how about Michael Hirsch in Newsweek? U.S. allies must accept that some U.S. unilateralism is inevitable, even desirable. This mainly involves accepting the reality of America's supreme right and supreme might, and truthfully appreciating how historically lucky they are to be protected by such relatively benign power. How about Colin Powell speaking before the Republican National Convention? The United States, quote, is a country that exists by the grace of divine providence. And finally, do you remember this one? She was the one that helped the campaign in Yugoslavia and Kosovo and was the one who helped the Clintons enact the austerity program and in Iraq that caused 500,000 children to die, Madeleine Albright. This was when she was Secretary of State. If we have to use force, it is because we are America. We are the indispensable nation. We stand tall. We see further into the future, end quote. Now, I could have given you 1,000 other quotes. Take them collectively, day to day, and you see what I'm then talking about when I say that we only have one truth in America today, official truth. And who gives us our official truth? Well, it depends upon which institution you're affiliated with. If you're affiliated with the school systems, it has to come through the school unions or the National Educational Department. If it's on churches, if it's on finance, on energy, today the energy cartels, which means that gas, nuclear, oil, and coal, they actually, behind closed doors with Dick Cheney, they wrote all of our national energy bills. The financial industry dictates that they don't want the Glass-Steagall Act, and suddenly it goes away. They don't want to be bothered by the Securities and Exchange Commission, and they don't want to be looked upon when they're trading commodities such as oil. So the Future Commodities Trading Act and all the others are adversely affected. So they have no controls whatsoever. In fact, there's only one truth. In the media, the truth comes from official sources. So if I, Gary Knoll, were to help an individual with a condition that an orthodox medical establishment could not help, the first thing that would happen is the New York Times would listen to me, maybe to the patient, but immediately call the official agency that is supposed to dispense the official truth. And if they say that's all nonsense, the patient couldn't have been helped because we couldn't help them, and therefore if they did get help, it was a spontaneous remission, end of quote. Then suddenly, no matter how many patients, I or any of the other 88,000 licensed clinicians who have proof of our experience with patients, the patient stories, those all have to be negated. Not a single one can be held. Because the danger that unfolds when you allow one truth that exists outside of official truth is you allow it to exist. That would be like saying 1,000 UFO sightings were all examined carefully. Only one was shown to be real. Well, hello, then you just established UFOs are real. So just dismiss them all. So that's why everything when it comes to politics and positions are always official. Hence, MSNBC is the official voice of the left, and Fox is the official voice for the right, and CNN is the official voice of nonsense. So then where do you go for your truths? Well, the trouble is many people are so confused that they are overwhelmed by the complexity of issues, and they simply stop wanting to think. And then sometimes people get so angry at what they find out when they finally awaken that they've been manipulated that they look for truth outside of the official truth, and then they're thrown out. Their opinions no longer count. Their words are no longer welcome. And that's why we have only one truth in America today, in all of our industries, all of our institutions. And then ask yourself, name me the institution in the United States that has told us the universal truth, the real truth, and you will find none have, because they can't. Now, one other thing on this, when I mentioned that the cost of oil is going up with a full knowledge of people on Wall Street, that it is insider manipulation. It means traders, commodity traders. These are the speculators. And these individuals are connected to politicians in Washington because they give lots of money. These are the people who will cause gasoline to go to its highest level. These are the people who want to keep interest rates at the Federal Reserve and have influence over the Federal Reserve, which is a private institution. It's not federal on any level at all. Yet it's been given the power of a dictatorial regime and should be abolished completely. These are the people. Now, do the speculators actually purchase the oil and use it? No. They trade between each other, forcing the price up, and as a result, everyone else has to pay more. It's time that we stop speculation completely, made it illegal in any commodity essential to life. Water, food, currencies, and oil and gas. You take speculation out, the prices of all those commodities will drop, which will take the suffering off a lot of people. And a couple other things. This is the latest. Now, you've heard me mention that in some parts of the world, they're living on as little as a dollar or two per day, and that's the worst poverty in the world. Well, guess what? According to this latest study, it's now in the United States. 1.6 million Americans are living on less than $2 a day. You heard me right. These are official figures. 1.2 million living on less than $2 a day. Why isn't anyone talking about that as an issue that needs some attention? And finally, I mentioned something the other day that the New York Times finally caught up to and reported on today. I said that it started 2 years ago when I was jogging up a beach, South Beach, which is a beautiful beach to jog on. And I noticed that I would see seaweed at the bottom of buildings or the bottom of swimming pool ledges. And I'm thinking, whoa, that's a real high tide. Now I'm finding that it comes up even higher. And I said, be very careful because Greenland is melting faster than anyone anticipated. The Great Glaciers are melting. Antarctica is melting faster. There's no mathematical model. What would have taken 100 years may take 10 years. But it's rising. This is the latest. And here's what it's from. Quote, rising seas dramatically increase the odds of damaging floods from storm surges. Global warming has raised global sea levels 8 inches since 1880, and the rate of rise is accelerating exponentially. These are the facts. And then it goes on to talk about how many people are at the level where they could be adversely affected by the rising water. 5 million live in homes that are less than, quote, 4 feet above high tide, a level lower than the century flood line for most locations analyzed. So we're looking at a lot of these homes and buildings simply being non-sustainable in the future. And then this was reaffirmed. People living in Florida, on the east coast of Florida, in the Miami area, clear up to West Palm Beach, Louisiana, and New York City. Because we're so low and the tides are getting higher, and then the storm surges are going to bring it in even higher still. I mentioned in my film, American Veterans, Neglected and Forgotten, and I thank all of you for coming to the premiere. And we're now working with vet organizations. If any of you know any vet organizations, would like to get a copy of the film, give us a call at 646-926-5422. For the next month, we just want to get vet organizations the heads up that this is a major issue. We're finally addressing it. And we want to get this in the hands of media people. This is the latest. I mentioned that I had filmed people in several states where if you fed them, if a church fed them in a public park that was okay for everyone else to eat in, it's there for everyone else. But if you're a homeless vet, the people feeding you will be arrested. So the minister, rabbi, the imam, the church members feeding you, cleaning up after you, will be arrested. That's a reality. A homeless vet sitting in a veterans park in Florida was arrested for being a homeless vet sitting in a veterans park. Sounds absurd? You got to see the truth. It'll shock you. And if you go to our website, you'll see both the people coming out of the theater's reactions, and you'll see a clip of the film itself. So go to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, watch the clip, or GaryNall.com, watch the clip, and you'll see this for yourself. Here's the latest. This is from Philadelphia. Philadelphia Mayor Michael Nutter wants to ban community organizations from feeding the hungry and homeless in city parks. Nutter says he wants the homeless to eat indoors, where mental health and medical services can be provided. Wants to make it against the law for anyone to be fed outside. So that means if there is a park you could end up, and there's a public park, and anyone else could go there and have a picnic. But if you are, if you're poor, not a good idea, because you could end up getting arrested if this goes through. So it's spreading. So A, it was homeless vets. Now it's just feeding the homeless, even in a good way. Quote, Greg Hoffman from The Nation. A stunning report released by the University of Michigan's National Poverty Center reveals that the number of U.S. households living on less than $2 per day, that's $2 per day in the United States, a standard used by the World Bank to measure poverty in developing nations like Africa, rose 130% in the last 11 years to 1.46 million. The number of children living in extreme conditions is now 2.8 million. Well, that's an awful lot of people living on $2 a day. That's millions of Americans. Now, let's just think. When was the last time any politician in either party, anyone in the media, decided to address what it means to be an American or a child living on $2 a day? I want to bring you these issues, because otherwise we don't think they're real. They are. Your thoughts, please. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Oh, and one other thing to confirm what I had said earlier about these, the price, who's speculating? This is just in. I was just handed this. The price of Brent crude, the world's most traded category of oil, dipped slightly yesterday after reaching a nine-month high. And why is it up to almost $3.57 a barrel or a gallon? Quote, Wall Street oil speculation driving surge in gas prices. They're confirming what I had said. It's all about speculation. So why don't they just stop it? They can't. Because our politicians are receiving money from the people who are doing it. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment with your calls and our guests. Please stay with us. Sugar that I said was more dangerous than aspartame, it is, write this down, it's called Neotame, N-E-O-T-A-M-E, and it's like aspartame on steroids. It's stronger, sweeter, more stable, and cheaper, and it's not safer than aspartame, so I suggest that you understand it doesn't have to be on the label, so that's why you should only consume products that don't have those artificial sweeteners in to begin with. We have our guest on. We're going to go our guest, and after our guest, then we'll go to your calls. Let's say hello now, too. I had introduced him earlier in the program, Bruce Dixon. Bruce, nice to have you with us today.
Thanks for having me, Gary.
Bruce, I'm concerned. I'm concerned not that we were enlightened about atrocities in Africa, in Uganda, in the Congo. That's important. Also, it's important to let us know about Kony's LRA and what it's done to hurt its people. That is all legitimate. My concern is that after reading it and having done a lot of research in this area, I'm concerned that we're not telling the full story, and I'm also concerned that we're not looking at who's behind this and why this phenomena has become a phenomena. And I'm wondering if you could take us, since you've researched this, you've written this, could you take us on a little journey here and talk about, is this really a part of a propaganda campaign to get us to become militarized in that area? And is this in any way associated with the massive amount of oil, water, diamonds, gold, coltan used in cell phones and GPS, which bordering Congo is the main supplier of? Is any of this publicity, any of this affiliated with that? And also tell us about Invisible Christian, the organization behind the Kony 2012, is it not also funded by a core of right-wing donors promoting fundamentalist Christianity? Your thoughts?
Yeah, well, in our article, which you can find in our article, Top 10 Reasons Why Coney is Phony, which can be found at www.blackagendareport.com, we specifically answer a number of those questions and some others. And the number 10 reason, in fact, is, in fact, that Invisible Child Soldiers is heavily funded by organizations that, by the Discovery Institute, for one thing, which is the major organization that supplies fake science to back up the contention that God made the world from intelligent design and that we need to replace the teaching of biological sciences in our schools and universities with teaching of intelligent design. The whole Coney 2012 thing does have all the earmarks of a psychological kind of operation, and it definitely is not what it says it is on its face. It says that it's about raising awareness of child soldiering in Uganda, when, in fact, our government invented child soldiering back in the last few years of the apartheid era to help protect the frontiers of South Africa when the liberation forces triumphed in Angola and Mozambique. That was when you first had the appearance of child soldiers. But back to the Coney 2012 campaign, what's so insidious about it is that it preys on ignorance. Campaigns to raise awareness of child soldiering in Africa that don't teach anybody about the history of the players, the processes, and the places are not really raising awareness. They're spreading ignorance. And in the process, they're making mostly white Americans, but actually all Americans. I have to include black folks in this too. After all, we got a black president, don't we? It's about making Americans feel good about themselves. And, you know, we have to get our head out of that dark, sticky place and realize that it's not about us. And it's not about making America look good. It's not about making us feel good. It's about learning what the histories of these places are. And when you learn what the histories of these places are and what the histories of these players are that Coney 2012 has allied itself with, you have to think again. Also, anybody who looks at the Coney 2012 video will notice that in the end, it claims a victory. What is the victory that it claims? It claims a victory when the Obama administration decided openly to send U.S. troops into Uganda. Now, that's got to tell you something very, very telling and very sinister right there. If Coney 2012's idea of victory is sending U.S. troops in, well, I mean, come on. It is about the oil, and it is by the way, oil has been discovered in Uganda, by the way. But it is about the oil. It's about the diamonds. It's about the gold. It's about the coltan. It's about the timber resources. And it's about the water resources. And it's about making Americans feel good about their empire and their mission to civilize and raise awareness about these inexplicable things in what they used to call darkest Africa. Last thing, when they talk about just highlight the hypocrisy of this kind of spreading awareness campaign. If you're spreading awareness about child soldiering and you're not spreading awareness of the fact that the government that the president of the government who you are aiding shot his own way to power using child soldiers, then are you really spreading awareness or are you spreading ignorance?
Well, Museveni's Ugandan government was corrupt and has been corrupt, and that wasn't emphasized. Also, where Joseph Kony is a genocidalist, and no one is in dispute about that. I did a whole six-hour series here on this network called Intervention in the Name of Freedom, Peace, Freedom, and Democracy, which showed that we just did the opposite. And in point of fact, I just want to point this out, that the Ugandan president that we supported, that we funded, is also accused by the same International Criminal Court as Kony for atrocities and crimes against humanity. And the statistics about the 30,000 missing children, that is not just Kony's. That also was based upon how many had died based upon the Ugandan government and how many atrocities the Ugandan government had committed in its own soldiers. So I found that when
That's quite correct, Gary. And we provide in the article at www.blackagendareport.com, we provide links to authoritative sources, including the site of the International Criminal Court itself, where they make this accusation.
Okay, well, Bruce Dixon, thank you very much. Your program is Tuesday, 4 p.m., Tuesday, 4 p.m., and all the best to the good work that you're doing to at least set some of the people in a more focused way of looking for the truth than just this one-sided propaganda campaign that's gone on. All the best to you.
All right. Thanks for inviting us, Gary.
I'm Gary Knoll, and it's called Black Agenda Report. Let's say hello before we go in studio here and to Elizabeth, who has your mail. Let's say hello to Dave from Brooklyn. Hi, Dave. Your turn.
How are you, Gary? How you been?
Good, thank you.
It's my point of view based on, you know, listening to a lot of what you said and everything that other progressive minds have been putting out there, is that Americans, for the most part, are still under the illusion of their prior lifestyles, of the expectations of privilege, and they haven't been demoralized to the level of where they're ready to fight back. They haven't been in that situation long enough, because from my point of view, there's still a lot of distractions. There's the iPod, iPad, and not blaming those tools of technology, but people immerse themselves in entertainment and in technology because they don't want to face the reality that's right there in their face. I think if they experience hardship long enough, and the fact that the promises that their grandfathers and forefathers and their parents made to them is no longer a reality for them, then they're going to start getting pissed off, and then maybe they're going to start, you know, because only when you realize that there's nothing in front of you after you've been told that there's something there, like the mystery God concept, then, you know, then people are going to mobilize and really start fighting back. That's my thoughts.
I would align with those. I think that you're spot on. I believe that for the 150 million Americans, approximately one half the population, who are in a destitute position, the working poor, the poor, and the lower middle class, there is no voice for them. There is no media on them, so we don't know what they're thinking. But I'm going back out. I'm spending 80 days on the road every day interviewing senior citizens, just senior citizens, about how they're coping with the life ahead, what they intend to do. Can they get organized? Have they sought help? Is anyone helping them or not? And because they're the silent ones in the United States. They've literally been written off except to exploit because someone wants to sell them something. So I thank you for those insights. We will continue this dialogue. We're going into studio right now. By the way, for those of you who are going to be attending the Left Forum for the weekend from tonight through Sunday, I'll be lecturing with a panel Saturday from noon to 2, room W626, with Professor Richard Wolff, Professor Emeritus of Economics, University of Massachusetts, Reverend Stephen Phelps, Senior Minister at Riverside Church, and Professor James Vetros from the Sociology Department, John Jay College. That's at the Left Forum down at Pace University campus in Lower Manhattan. Now, Elizabeth, how are you?
Hello. Hi, Gary. Fine, thank you. How are you?
Excellent.
I've got an email here from Art. I'll just read this briefly. He's saying that his fear is that if we were to wait for 5 years, he says, us progressives will be either in jail, in concentration camps, or dead, he says. Therefore, he believes we should start now, since we have a Ron Paul and we don't have to get on the ballot in 50 states and jump off from there. He says we can launch a campaign by letters, email, phone, lower power FM and internet, and get the military and the police on our side and their families into action and influence. And this could avoid much bloodshed.
Who is it?
His name's Art.
Okay. Art, I appreciate the input. I would like to share a little different perspective. I am optimistic about the future. I am optimistic because I see that only by breaking down can we finally be to the point, as my guest, or as a caller just said, can we have a breakthrough? I do not believe that any institution anywhere in the United States will willingly or on any voluntary basis or enlightened basis reform itself to the place where it actually is accountable to the people, transparent and benevolent and benign in its attitude. I believe that the wealthiest industries, the wealthiest corporations are doubling down. They're the ones who are getting the government to insist upon the Patriot Act, Homeland Security Act, the FBI, to make everyone that protests anything now a terrorist suspect. And those are the people who are really fearful. And what are they fearful of? They're fearful that they have been so exploitive that if the American public ever stops consuming and stops believing what they produce, that they will rebel, first economically, by simply withdrawing their finances from their banks, stop buying in their Walmart, stop buying their genetically engineered food, their, you know, their slave labor-made garments, and start to organize. I do not believe that we will see anything but an acceleration of greed. As much as the wealthy have, who are the super wealthy and the corporations, like $100 billion that Apple's sitting on, the largest cash reserve in the world, more than the United States government has as an actual liquid cash reserve with no debt against it, it still had to be forced to even to acknowledge that Foxconn, the largest factory in the world, employing over 400,000 people, where it makes their computers and iPods, that it was a dealing with slave labor conditions. So intolerable, people were willing to commit mass suicide by jumping off the building of Foxconn, and they had to put safety nets to protect the employees. Not once did Steve Jobs, who I think is a despicable human being, all the geeks think he's a god. I don't, because I see what he didn't have to do to exploit people to death in order to give people who are wantonly materialist their next toy. Anyhow, I'm going to deal with that next week with a whole expose on Apple and also on Microsoft and how they made their money and the type of actual mindsets they have, aside from the, you know, their media control. I don't believe that we should fear the next 5 years. I do not believe that we will be thrown in concentration camps, arrested, or killed. I believe that there will be accelerated surveillance. There will be isolated arrest, as they just did with this organic farmer that they arrested in a SWAT team, tortured him, abused him for days because he was selling organic raw milk. And that the FDA was behind that, and the FBI was behind that. You will have more cases like that. But there are too many people who are too high profile, who have too many people listening and watching them. You go after Alex Jones, you just might as well have stuck your hand into a wasp nest. You go after Jesse Ventura. Do you think all the people who respect him for his courage as a governor, as all the things, do you think they're going to step by and just allow that to happen? Do you think Chris Hedges, if he's arrested and abused or disappeared, do you think that the media is going to stand by who have published him? Do you think the Internet's going to be quiet? See, they're afraid of the biggest battle that's going to come. It's not going to be the New York Times. They're milksop. They're neutered. And they're complicit. Or the Washington Post, or any of the other media. It's the Internet. And that's where legions of hundreds of millions of people can suddenly turn you off. Look what was happening to Rush Limbaugh. And I'm sorry to say he still has 3 sponsors left. Right? He's lost 150. And his media demise, I believe, will be in the near future because as much as people love him, the people give him $500 million contracts will not, because he's not bringing in the money. And he will be the great white shark with a nosebleed. And he'll be eaten like meat thrown to a group of piranhas. But I believe that we also should be patient and look to organize, communicate, cooperate on important issues and set all the differences we have aside. It's going to take 5 years for us to have enough ability to know each other and what we're working towards to have a meaningful platforms. Now, some of what Ron Paul has stood for, I agree with. Some of what Ron Paul stands for, I abhor and argue with him and have on the air. But take what Ron Paul says is right, and take what Jesse Ventura says is right, and take Dennis Kucinich, which I believe he will reestablish himself in what is right, and what all the others say is right. Bring all these people together. Bring the thousands of progressive minds together including Danny Schachter and all this. Bring them together so they can meet, talk, and say, okay, we can't all have our way. We can't all have our ideas or we'll get nothing done. What can we decide would be 10 issues that we can all transform this country? Because through breakdown, you have breakthrough. Through breakthrough, you have transformation. Through transformation, you surrender the idea of reform that always goes to the bottom. And so an adaptation that is even further down the scale than reform. So no more reform of anything. No more advocating, well, let's just, you know, go along. No, we want to transform our lives. There's at least 10% of the American population right now willing to engage in this conversation, willing to live lives of a higher moral and a higher virtue. 10% of the American population is still 31 million people. That is a measurable amount of people, and there's still 49% of all voters who are now called independent, the most in American history, but they're not organized yet. Be patient. Don't be motivated by fear. If you're motivated by fear, you will lose. If you're motivated by love and joy and peace, you will have change, at least for those willing to have change. Thank you
very much. Thank you.
We're out of time. I want to thank you all for taking your time to listen and watch this program. I'll be on the road for a while, but I'm taking my portable ISDN. We'll be broadcasting daily and bring you the stories of America's forgotten citizens, senior citizens. Joining us in studio at this moment to start his show is Danny Schachter with the News Dissector. And we always look forward to Danny's show because he does his homework. He is a scholar. He's an activist. He's a multi-Emmy award-winning producer and director. He has done over 25 documentaries of importance. And he's not afraid to take on the issues. And he does it with a humanistic quality I appreciate. Nice to have you with us here on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hey, thank you, Gary. I'll be at the Left Forum also right after your session at 3 o'clock talking about media ethics in one of that maze of rooms up there at Pace University, west, south, east, somewhere. I'll be there. You can find me.
It's done by the left, which means that you may not find your room.
Left
you may
out.
Not lecture, but you can have an argument on the street with someone. They should have brought some Republicans.
Every year they say we now have 1,800 speakers. When we get up to like 2,800 speakers, I'll be paying more attention. Thanks, Gary, so much.